giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Brett's Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donig. Smashville lives here on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Reds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan here alongside Willie Donick. The Predators coming off of a 4-3 shootout win last night at Bridgestone Arena against the league-leading Colorado Avalanche. And Willie, here's something that I wondered as I was watching the game last night. A rare night off for you. TNT carried the game. And as you're watching it, is there any part of you who thinks, man, I wish this game would have been a lot more boring because I wanted to call this game. Any FOMO?
It's a good question. First of all, greetings to everybody.
Oh, hello.
And,
yeah,
Willie's
here.
Yes, it's good to talk to everybody. I feel like I've missed a week or two. I had a bye week somewhere in there.
Well, Thanksgiving, with your travel schedule and Thanksgiving,
Sweden.
You're a busy man. We appreciate you taking the time to join us once again.
And
your name is on the
show,
after all.
Yes, and I do have to share. A dedicated, diehard Predator fan came up to me and he said, "You guys are the best, but I want two per week of Preds Insiders. I want two shows per week." I was like, thanks for the compliment. Not sure about the second show per week. We'll take it into consideration.
Yes, we will take it under advisement.
But your question, it was a great game. There's two ways that we do it. Like, we all, as broadcasters, we decide, number one, do you want to go to the game or do you just want to sit back home? So we were divided last night. I decided to go, and I did reserve the right to leave early if it didn't go well, but it was a great game. And yeah, I guess in the back of your mind, you're like, man, I would have loved to have called that game. That was a dramatic game, one of the best wins they've had all year. But it is an interesting perspective to either of the two options. You watch the national broadcast, see how they see the Predators, how they see the game. You sort of compare how they call the game with how you call the game. And then there's something to be said for just watching live and not calling it. You see things away from the puck that you don't see when you're calling the game. My responsibility is the puck. So peripherally, I like to be able to maybe anticipate what's coming by seeing what's going on. But my first responsibility, I can't look too far away from where the puck is like the analyst can. So when you're watching by yourself and you're not calling it, you can kind of take a more broad view of the game so you see things.
Well, let's talk about that. What you were able to see last night by not calling the game. Let's quickly recap what happened in the game first. Four combined goals in the first period. The Avalanche get out to a 1-0 lead, another early goal against the Predators, I should say. Brock Nelson scores to make it 1-0 Colorado. Jonathan Marchessault ties the game at 1. Shortly thereafter, Reed Schaefer gives the Predators a 2-1 lead. Arturi Lehkonen ties the game at 2-2. By the way, all of those goals were scored within the first 10 minutes and 21 seconds of the game. No goals in the second period. Brady Shea scores a goal with roughly 7 minutes left in regulation to give the Predators a 3-2 lead. They were mere seconds away, Willie Donick, from handing the Avalanche their third, yes, I said third, regulation loss of the season. But Cale Makar forces overtime on a seeing eye shot from the point with 8 seconds left. No goals in 3-on-3 overtime. Ryan O'Reilly scores the only goal in the shootout. Predators win 4-3, their fifth win in 7 games. So a quick recap of what happened last night. But let's go back to what you were talking about. What you were able to see when you didn't have to call the game. And there were a few players, as we discussed this before the show, there were a few players who stood out to you while you were watching the game last night. And let's go over those players. Let's start with Steven Stamkos. Steven Stamkos has started to come on offensively. I really do think the line that he's been playing on with Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Evangelista, I think all three of their games have been elevated by playing on that line. We asked Barry Trotz about this yesterday on DVD, and he talked about the makeup of the line. But I do think playing with those two players has helped Steven Stamkos. What did you see from Stamkos last night and recently?
Well, recently, I think since he has been put on the line with Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Evangelista. That seems to have put the Predators in a better place in terms of balance up and down the lineup. Now, the next thing, which we'll talk about later, is how to get more out of Philip Forsberg, who is the weapon that is not on the line with O'Reilly. Right now, the whole thing revolves around who's playing with O'Reilly, because you have a pretty good idea. Whoever's playing with him is going to have a chance to succeed. But the guys that aren't playing with him have to find ways to get production. And, of course, the centers have to be more productive than they have been, but we know some of the limitations that they've had. That being said, what they've challenged Steven Stamkos to do, and he has responded, is find more ways to get involved. The way he's played for years and years and years has been money for him. He's a Hall of Famer. But on this team, this season, he can't play the way he played for all those years in Tampa. So they've challenged him to find new ways to get involved. And that's what I'm noticing. He didn't score last night, but if you look at some of the chances that he had at him, he was very noticeable. He got in tight. He was skating. He was involved in plays off the cycle. You know, things that, quite honestly, for stretches for him as a Predator, he wasn't as noticeable, right? There were games where he was not getting any shots on goal, not with the puck very often in the offensive zone, especially 5-on-5. He is really attacking, and he was a threat. He easily could have scored a couple last night. So I really like the direction that his game is going, and that's good for a lot of reasons.
There are two young players who you also highlighted to me. Let's start with Adam Willsby. Adam Willsby, I thought, had a really good game against the Avalanche. Made a really nice play along the blue line to set up Brady Shea's goal in the third period. That puck was on the blue line. I wondered if it would be offside, but the official was right there, immediately made sure to let everybody know he's onside. So Willsby made a really nice play there. He also turned Cale Makar inside out in overtime, which is not an easy thing to do for anybody, let alone Adam Willsby, who a lot of fans around the NHL aren't familiar with. So for him to make that move on Cale Makar to set up a scoring chance in overtime, I was really impressed. So what about Willsby?
Willsby, to me, is in that category of players to watch close because he's important. He's 25, right? He hasn't played a lot of NHL games. He's a late bloomer. But if you're looking ahead of how do the Predators build back a team with the layers to be successful, right? Just recently, just a couple days ago, Craig Smith retired, right? Craig Smith was never an all-star, but Craig Smith was a guy that you could count on. You knew exactly what you were getting every year from him, and he was part of a winning team. That's the kind of player that Nashville needs to build that next nucleus of that Barry Trotz mentions with us every week. So Willsby, is he one of those guys? You know, he can look lost. He's been hurt a couple of times. But remember, he was a guy that during training camp, everybody was saying, look at this. This is the guy that's making the impression. Now I think we're seeing just the last couple of games, you started to notice it. He was getting scratched for a while. Sort of lost his spot. Then Justin Barron got injured, and he's worked his way back into the lineup. That was one of his best games, but you see what he can do. He has the mobility to make some plays, and that play against Cale Makar in overtime was astounding. Remember last year, his first goal against the Rangers was a similar kind of play. Made an incredible one-on-one move and great shot.
Roman Josi-esque.
Yeah, and you're like, where is that? Give me more of that. And it hasn't really been there, but he's capable, right? He flashes. That skating ability that he has is really good. So if he can just be more consistent with the little details of the game, you wonder, you know, do you have a, you know, I'm not going to say a first pair defenseman, but do you have a winning defenseman that you could put on the second or third pair that will be solid every night? The more he plays, the more you hope he'll get there. Same is true with Spencer Stastny, but I've really noticed Willsby the last couple of games.
The other young player is Fedor Svechkov. And Svechkov has had a rough season. He started the season hoping to be the team's second line center. It didn't work out the way the Predators had hoped. He's been demoted in the lineup. But he made a really nice, let's call it, undercover play. I can't think of a better word than that. Last night.
Stealth.
Stealth. Perfect. Stealth play.
Oh, sorry. There's our vocab bell.
We brought it over from DVD. A stealth play last night to set up Reed Schaefer's goal. It was off of a faceoff. He wins a board battle in the corner, which sets up Schaefer's drive to the net and goal. And Svechkov, like Willsby, to your point, Willie, is a player who the Predators hope can be a part of the solution moving forward. I'm not sure if Svechkov is going to be a linchpin in the Predators lineup moving forward, someone who moves the needle significantly. But to your point about Craig Smith, you still need those depth players to rise to the occasion. Smith did that throughout his Predators career. The Predators hope Svechkov can do the same. But I really like that play from Svechkov to win that board battle to help set up Schaefer's goal last night.
Yeah, and a quick shout out to Craig Smith, who is living back in Nashville now for a great career. So one of the classy guys, good pro. You covered him for a long time, Adam. So shout out to Smitty. Of course, everybody's Smitty. There's a million Smitty. So now you got Cole Smith. He's coming back here pretty soon. So we have to make that distinction. But Svechkov, really good underlying numbers last night. I honestly thought, based on who they're playing against, in a game that they gave up a lot of territory, right? You're just not going to dominate the Avalanche. You are going to give up territory.
Yes, you are.
And they did. And fortunately, UC Saros was on his A game last night. He was
stole
great.
The game for the Predators.
But that being said, Svechkov, I think, did a very good job of the two-way game that we've been told they saw when they drafted him, right? The minute they drafted him, they said, this is a guy that really can excel in the 200-foot game. I think recently, if you take a look, he was at rock bottom, and they sat him for a couple of games. They called it hitting the reset button. Get away from it. Let's hit the reset button. Let's look at some things and then come back fresh. They moved him down in the lineup. They played him with some of his peers, right? Younger players like Schaefer or Wood or somebody like that. And he started to build his game back. Last night, I saw him a couple times in the overtime head up with McKinnon in the open ice, staying right with him. It was a play in overtime where he pins McKinnon to the boards, strips the puck from him, gets it back. You know how big possession is in the overtime. That overtime was pretty balanced, given the fact you have McKinnon and Makar on one side.
It should be illegal, by the
yes,
way, for Cal Makar and Nathan McKinnon on the ice at the same time, 3-on-3 overtime. It should be illegal. It's exhilarating to watch.
I would just take it, just be illegal in Denver, okay? And like at home, maybe you take your chances. In Denver, it's terrifying when those guys have the puck 3-on-3. I have seen it firsthand. But I thought Svechkov, his confidence is coming back. He's starting to get points. He's getting his shot off. He has a really good release. Unfortunately, not much has gone in, but he can score some goals, right? He's been woefully below the production that they thought they were going to get. And I think because for a while there, he just lost all sense of confidence. I see it coming back. He's a guy that's got that great personality. It's a little bit like Evangelista. He was in that mode as well. Right now, Evangelista is playing with confidence. He's got that swagger. He's a guy that loves to talk out there, make, you know, he's an entertaining player to watch. But when you're not doing anything, it's harder to have the word that Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett use a lot is joy. You know, it's hard to have a lot of joy if you're not doing well and the team's not doing well. Evangelista is playing with that joy right now. I'm seeing it come back with Svechkov. He's a guy that everybody gravitates towards. So there's signs of life for him. He's gone through a tough time, but he's a critical guy because of the position he plays.
By the way, quickly, you mentioned the Smiths, Craig Smith, Cole Smith, Smitties. It's not as confusing as when the Predators had Scott Hartnell and Ryan Hartman on the team at the same time, both of whom are Hartsy. That was a confusing time for me as a reporter.
And now we have Eustace and UC. Big juice, little juice.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, let's talk about Ryan O'Reilly, because his name is out there. And let's talk about the value of Ryan O'Reilly to the team on the ice versus his value in a trade. And what's more important to the Predators? We'll do that coming up next. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you. Willie, I'm looking at the Predators schedule. It's a Avalanche sandwich The Predators host the Blues on Thursday, visit the Avalanche on Saturday, then visit the Blues on Monday. So it's Blues, Avalanche, Blues. Let's call it an Avalanche sandwich.
With like Blues as the sauce?
As the bread?
As the bread? I don't know. How do you...
I don't know.
And then it's Carolina again, so you could like a triple deck sandwich with whatever in there.
That's true.
So it's like three teams round robin. I don't think they're playing each other, but the Predators play exactly three teams over a 2 week stretch, more or less.
So the Predators are
back
in
action. Pretty tough teams.
Yes, the Predators. Well, the Blues aren't. The Predators are back in action tomorrow against the St. Louis Blues. Puck drop at 7, thank God. Pre-game at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. And Willie Donick and the FanDuel Sports Network crew will be back on the call as God intended. Speaking of the St. Louis Blues, let's talk about a former member of the St. Louis Blues, a Stanley Cup winning member of the St. Louis Blues, a Conn Smythe Trophy winner with the St. Louis Blues, that being Ryan O'Reilly. As you mentioned, Willie, O'Reilly has been centering a line with Steven Stamkos and Luke Evangelista. And that line over these past 7 games, the Predators have won 5 of 7. And over the past 7 games, that line has played incredibly well, controlling 62.1% of the expected goals at even strength. When you look at points, they have combined for, if my quick math is right, they have combined for 21 points at even strength over the past 7 games. O'Reilly has 8, Evangelista has 7, and Stamkos has 6. That is indeed 21 points. I'm going to pat myself on the back. So that line has been playing incredibly well, which leads us to the future of Ryan O'Reilly. Our friend Elliot Freeman, who joins us every Thursday on DVD, had a report on Hockey Night in Canada last weekend about the New Jersey Devils. And Elliot said that the Devils are, by his estimation, the most active team in the league in terms of figuring out what's out there, what they can do. And in discussing the Devils, Elliot said that the Devils, who are GM'd by former Predators captain Tom Fitzgerald,
or Fitzy, as Quinn Hughes called him, and yes, Everybody in Vancouver lost their marbles. Like, what is he doing calling the nickname of the guy? He plays for us, man!
Yes, I
all
did.
Kinds of speculation on uniting the Hughes brothers, so this is all revolving around, yes, these rumors you're talking about.
So, according to Elliot, the Devils have eyes on Stamkos and O'Reilly. And we talked to Barry Trotz about this yesterday. He neither confirmed nor denied the Devils' interest in those players, which I understand.
He channeled the Iran Contra hearings from way back with Oliver North.
Well, I asked Trotz if he disputed the report. He did not. I honor the privacy of his conversations with Tom Fitzgerald, but it's out there. And as Trotz said to us, not just yesterday, but the week before and the week before that.
Probably next week.
With the way the Predators have been playing, where they are in the standings, there's going to be a lot of rumors around the Nashville Predators. But The O'Reilly part of this is interesting, Willie. And we've talked about this before on this program as well as on DVD. Do the Predators value O'Reilly more for what he can bring to the team in the dressing room, on the ice, etc.? Do they value him more that way? Or do they value him more as a trade chip that can get them something of significance? Because I've made this comparison before. Ryan O'Reilly is the Predators' version of Jeffrey Simmons, because Jeffrey Simmons is by far the best player on the Tennessee Titans, and the Titans, I think, could have gotten something significant for him at the NFL trade deadline. The Titans chose not to do that. Trotz, to his credit, is not ruling anything out. He has not come out and said Ryan O'Reilly is off limits, but it's clear that it's going to take a significant offer to get Ryan O'Reilly from the Predators. So it'll be interesting to see, Willie, how Trotz balances that, because the team is playing well and O'Reilly has a lot to do with that.
He has a lot to do with that.
But in the long run, is it better for O'Reilly, similarly to the Titans and Simmons? Is it better in the long run for O'Reilly to be here to establish the culture that Trotz can build off of in the future? Or is it better for the Predators to get maybe a first-round pick, maybe a top prospect for O'Reilly and start building that way?
I think it's a really good question. And right now, let's give Ryan O'Reilly credit and Steven Stamkos and some of these other veterans that they're not blind to what's going on, right? They know around the league this is getting thrown out there. Hey, the Predators could be sellers. They're at the bottom right now. They have not mailed it in. They're going the other way. They're playing with this kind of drive of we want to keep this together. They have not given up the shift.
There's a little FU in their game right now.
Oh, I would say so. And they're also trying to, this is what Andrew Burnett, I think, is pounding into them, is, look, we've been talking about this process. The process is better than it was last year. We're just not seeing the results. We've got to find a way to win these close games. And now they're starting to find ways to win the tight ones like last night and down in Florida. That's going their way. And maybe there's a little bit more belief and confidence that they can be successful. But they're still a ways from that, right? They're still needing to climb a lot of notches on the ladder, even though they're really not that far out, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But O'Reilly, it's a great question because it is not as simple as, hey, if you get a first-round pick and a prospect, hey, done deal. Because Ryan O'Reilly is holding everything together at the center position. Let's say Ryan O'Reilly was traded tomorrow. Who are your centers for the rest of the year?
Yikes.
Who's your number one center?
Eric Halla?
Fedor Svechkov? Michael McCarron? Those are your choices. You have three on the roster right now, and then blank, you'd have to have another center come in. Who would that be?
David Edstrom.
He's not ready. Like, he's 20. Like, someday. So this is where it's not as simple as just saying, hey, the price will be high. Go ahead and take what you can get. Now, if you're blown away, then that's something. But I think it is, you tell me if you agree, Adam, a little bit similar to some guys with 2 years left on their contract that he referred to last year. And I would say Michael McCarron would be one, where he said, look, I feel like I can get the same amount next year as I can get this year. And so as soon as I trade one of these guys, I'm immediately going to be looking for their replacement. So let me ask you this, Adam. Is it unreasonable to say that with all of that Ryan O'Reilly brings to the table, he's helping Evangelista, he's setting the tone for all of the young players, how to play, how to be a pro, the nuances of the game. There's nobody better to have in your locker room. Development is essential for these guys. He sets the example that you want every day. There's value in that. Couldn't you trade him as a rental next year and get a decent amount? He's still got another year on his contract. Maybe he wouldn't get quite as much. And I also don't think he wants to go anywhere. I think he loves having his family here. He likes the market. He wants to do well here. I don't think he certainly hasn't gone to Barry Trotz and said, get me out of here.
That's part of the calculus when discussing trading Ryan O'Reilly this season versus next season, because if an acquiring team gets two potential playoff runs out of Ryan O'Reilly, that's more valuable than just one. But let me throw something back at you, Willie, because our colleague Derek Mason made this point to me last week when we were talking about this. I used the Jeffrey Simmons comparison. D. Mace's point was, if the Titans would have traded Jeffrey Simmons, who's the leader in that locker room? You can't really think of one off the top of your head. However, if the Predators traded Ryan O'Reilly, you still have Roman Josi, you still have Steven Stamkos, you still have UC Saros, you still have Philip Forsberg. There are other leaders in that dressing room. Not to take away from everything you've just said about Ryan O'Reilly, all of which is true, but there wouldn't be a leadership vacuum, leadership void in the Predators dressing room if you trade O'Reilly the way the Titans would have had if they traded Simmons.
Yeah, and for people that listen to our show, they might think, wow, I'm taking the opposite side as I did with Simmons, because I was a trade Simmons.
As was I.
And I just feel like building a roster is a little different in NFL football, in which you can get more immediate help in the draft.
Yes.
If you get extra picks, and the Titans really lack the extra picks. So if you could have gotten a windfall, and where I was a little bit critical of the Titans is it didn't look like they even really pushed it to see how high the price could go. And he's playing fantastic football right now. Kind of like O'Reilly right now is playing so well that people around the league, with the shortage of centers that are out there, they've got to be drooling to say, well, what could we do? Like you mentioned Tom Fitzgerald. Now, there's a lot of things that the Devils are dealing with. They can't afford all these guys. They can't get O'Reilly, Stamkos, and Quinn Hughes. It's impossible. No matter how much money they try to trade out, they can't do all this stuff. I don't know if this is more of a contingency plan if they can't make a deal work with Hughes. But I think if you're Barry Trotz, you're in a position where you're able to go into the car dealership and you're in a position of strength because you don't have to trade him. You have him next year, and he's providing a lot if he stays. There's a great argument if he stays in it. If he's gone, he is the glue holding together the forward group. Without him, I don't see how they could compete night in and night out.
I would agree with that. And the idea of this team attempting to find four centers to play without Ryan O'Reilly scares me.
And let's include next year, right? Yeah. I don't know that David Edstrom at 21 is going to be able to help them next year at center. Maybe he'll start to be ready to play some games, kind of like they're working Reed Schaefer in. They're working Matt Wood in there. Mm-hmm. But to give him huge responsibility, you see what's happening with Svechkov. They've gave him probably more responsibility than they wanted to, but they really didn't have a choice. And it's so hard to find centers. So that has to be kept in mind when they make this decision.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, let's take a deep dive into the Predators' past seven games. They've won 5 of 7. What's been working that maybe wasn't working before? Willie and I will discuss that coming up next. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Adam Vingan here with you. The Predators are back in action tomorrow at home against the St. Louis Blues. Correct me if I'm wrong, Willie, the first matchup with the St. Louis Blues this season?
It is. It is the first matchup, and it's a big game, really. It's an important game. They announced today, the Blues, that Jordan Kyrou is going to be out for a good while. He's a guy that has hurt the Predators. Kyrou is one of those guys that can float up, and he can look really, really good, and then he can help you by mistakes he makes. It's kind of like happens with a lot of skilled guys, but
yes,
he's a weapon out of the lineup for the Blues, so I'm intrigued to see how these two teams match up because, as you said, they're going to play twice here in a week.
The Blues 11, 13, and 7 for 29 points on the season, so a rough season in St. Louis. The two teams match up tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. The two teams will also face each other in St. Louis on Monday. So, Willie, the Predators are 5-2. In their past seven games, playing inspired hockey, these games have been fun. Even the games they've lost, they've been entertaining, which I'm all for.
I don't know about you. I wasn't super entertained in Carolina in the first half of the game.
Yeah.
That was...
Correction.
That was the...
Correction. Excluding the Carolina game.
That was
game.
Like the Globetrotters against the Washington Nationals or something. It was ugly.
Excluding the Carolina game. You're right. Most of the games have been entertaining over the past seven games. The Predators have won 5 of them, which certainly helps. So what you and I decided to do was we decided to put on our big-ass glasses and crunch some numbers and take a look at what's been working for the Predators over the past seven games versus what wasn't working or what hasn't been working for the entire season. And there are a couple of things that stand out to me. By the way, this is the nerdy segment of the program. So I'm hoping that
fancy stats.
Fancy stats. I'm hoping.
We'll do the math.
Yes.
So you don't have to.
Correct.
So let's do that. You will not have to do any math. So
right.
Let your brain relax. You don't have to do the math.
No, we did the math.
Didn't do the math, but I'm looking at the numbers. And,
okay.
Yeah.
I mostly did the math. Anyway, so one thing I looked at first is a fancy stat called PDO. And PDO is simply the combination of a team's shooting percentage and save percentage. And the baseline is 100. This is a way to approximate puck luck. So if a team has a combined shooting and save percentage of over 100, they're probably getting a lot more bounces. On the other hand, if a team has a combined save and shooting percentage under 100, they are not getting the bounces. At 5-on-5 this season, the Predators have a PDO of 97.4, an 8.5 shooting percentage, an 88.9 save percentage. Over the past seven games, that PDO is 105, a 13.5 shooting percentage, and a 91.5 save percentage. So they've been getting better goaltending, but they have been shooting the puck a lot better. So what this tells me is that the Predators are riding a bit of a wave here. They're getting the bounces. It's unsustainable, most likely. They will regress to the mean, which is a nerdy way of saying they'll get back down to 100. They're not going to keep shooting 13.5%.
But if they could be at 100, that's still better than 97,
correct,
as you said.
Yes.
So it's like regressing to the mean. That still would be better because they have been progressing,
yes,
to the mean
100
recently.
Would still be better than what they did, what they've done so far this season.
Right.
At 97.4. So they're riding a bit of a shooting luck wave. That's a simple way of putting it. Something else I've noticed. UC Saros has been playing well. He has stolen two of the five wins. He stole the game in Florida, and he stole the game against Colorado last night. And by steal, what I mean is, again, getting a little nerdy here, Saros's goal saved above expected in those two games was higher than the margin of victory. So Saros saved 1.05 goals above expected against the Avalanche, the Predators 1-1. Therefore, he stole the game. So he has stolen two of the five wins. So that's helpful as well. Something else random I noticed, Willie. So the Predators have actually done an underwhelming job over the past seven games of generating scoring chances. But what they have done exceptionally well is getting those scoring chances on net. Over the past seven games, 66.2% of their scoring chances have required the goalie on the other team to make a save. That's the number one percentage in the league over the past seven games. 17 of their 25 goals over the past seven games have been scored off of scoring chances. For the season, the Predators are at 60.2% chance on net percentage. So although they aren't generating a lot, when they are generating scoring chances, they are requiring the opposing goaltender to make a save, which helps. And they've scored, as I said, 17 of their 25 goals off of scoring chances. So those are some of the fancy stats I picked up on.
Yeah, and I think they're starting to see that if you stay with it and you play your system, I think this would be true of any team, regardless of the type of system that you play. There's wide open systems. There's more the way the Predators are adjusting to play this year, trying to limit scoring chances more so than attack and play an up and down trading chances kind of game. That you can have some success. Eventually, you will be at about 100. Right now, they're up at 105 to try to get overall up to 100. They've been way below 100. So that's what I think Andrew Burnett and the coaching staff are pounding into them right now. Guys, you see, it will work. You will score. If you keep doing the things that we're emphasizing here, here's where the chances are going to happen. We just have to bury those chances. They're doing a better job of converting, like you said, and they're getting the shots through. That was a woefully low stat last year of the percentage of shots that did not get through to the net. Shot attempts that were not on net or blocked or missed. They did not score well in those areas at all. I think they've identified themselves as a team that's not a super fast team. They got to do it the grinding style, right? Dump the puck in, go after the other team's defense, forecheck, get it back, cycle, go to the net. And they hope they will get enough goals that way. And recently, they've had enough goals. I don't think they're going to be a freewheeling team that's going to start scoring four goals a night. But if they can just make improvements and get Roman Josi going and get Philip Forsberg going, there's some guys that really haven't given them much. If they can get a little bit more from those guys, maybe you have enough offense to win with more consistency.
So to your point about getting shots through, again, the Predators over the past seven games, I'm limiting this to scoring chances only, not all shots on net. And scoring chances for me are any shot attempts from the slot. So over the past seven games, the the Predators have hit the net on 66.2% of their scoring chances, which is number one in the league over that span. For the season, they are at 60.2%. Last season, they were at 55.7%, which was 31st in the NHL. To your point, the Predators did a poor job of getting all shots through, but even their scoring chances. That played a part in them not scoring a lot of goals.
I feel like it's happened a lot this year, and of course, all of last year. But I think it comes down to, you know, something simple. To take all of the analytics with it.
Summarize the fancy stats for us.
The way to do it when you're watching and you say, are they making plays, right? Great teams make plays. And when you have Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, those guys make more plays than just about anybody on the planet, right? The Predators have less playmakers. But if you can be opportunistic and when the play's there, give yourself a chance, right? Let's make the good pass. Let's get a good shot on. Make the goalie make a great save. How many times has Chris Mason on our broadcast said, yeah, they've got a certain amount of shots, but has the other goalie really had to make any great saves?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he kind of looks at as his eye test. And then I think we can all visualize plenty of times, maybe there's a two-on-one or you've got the guy open and the pass is just behind where it needs to be, or the shot goes off the heel of your stick, or the puck bounces on you. They just haven't converted enough. But now it's starting to change, as you pointed out with those numbers. They're making more plays. And I think they're still capable of getting a little bit more.
I think they're definitely more capable of generating more in terms of scoring chances. Again, over the past seven games, they are tied for 25th in the NHL in scoring chances per game. But first, in getting those chances on net. So to your point, are they making plays? Yes. When they have the opportunities in front of them over the past seven games, they are making the most of them. To summarize, is what the Predators are doing right now sustainable? Probably not. Again, 13.5% shooting at 5-on-5 over the past seven games. That is going to dip. But what you are seeing over these past seven games, I think you summarized it perfectly, Willie. You're seeing the process start to bear fruit. And that's incredibly important for a team that is struggling the way that the Predators have been struggling. There is proof of concept. It's not perfect, but they can look at themselves. They can look at the score sheets and say, hey, what we're doing right now, it's starting to work. And that can build confidence, which can help them moving forward. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, Willie mentioned Philip Forsberg. Earlier, we talked about players who have been playing well. Let's take a look at some players who the Predators need a little bit more from if they want to sustain what they've been doing over the past seven games. We'll do that next. Adam Bingham and Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Adam Bingham and Willie Donick here with you. The Predators win 4-3 in a shootout against the league-leading Colorado Avalanche last night. The Predators are back in action tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena against the St. Louis Blues. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. You can also catch the game on the FanDuel Sports Network with Willie Donick, Chris Mason, Hal Gill, and Lindsey Rowley. We missed you last night, Willie, watching the game on TNT. No disrespect to Kenny Albert and Brian Boucher, who are pros. Love them personally. Love listening to them call games. But it's not the same when our friend Willie Donick isn't calling a game.
Thank you.
It's just not the same.
My head is getting bigger in the studio as we speak.
Let's see if he can make it out of here with how large his head is growing after all of those compliments. So, Willie, we've talked about players who have been playing well, but you also wanted to focus on some players who the Predators need more from. And despite the fact that the Predators have won 5 of their past 7 games, they've only gotten one goal out of Philip Forsberg over those 7 games. 4 points, 1 goal, 3 assists in those past 7 games. Now, to be fair, as you mentioned earlier, Philip Forsberg is not playing with Ryan O'Reilly right now. He is playing with Erik Haula and Jonathan Marchessault. And frankly, that line has not been performing well analytically. They have generated just 39.8% of the expected goals at even strength over the past seven games. By comparison, the O'Reilly Stamkos Evangelista line, 62.1% of the expected goals at even strength over the past seven games. So that line, Forsberg, Halla, and Marchessault, at least analytically, has not been up to snuff.
And if you notice last night, they tried something that worked well when they got way behind against Carolina. They moved Fedor Svechkov and Matt Wood up with Philip Forsberg. It didn't stay that way, I don't think, the whole game. But it's a continued attempt to try to figure out, whoever's not playing with O'Reilly, how do we get the most out of the rest of the gang, basically? And so Philip Forsberg right now is being unselfish, right? Because he's a first-line player. But he's got the job of, let me try to carry the second line. And his production has dropped off. But that's something that I think is a central question of, if this team is going to climb back, and they're 5 points out with two games in hand. Now, on the surface, there's like, you're thinking, that's not that far, right? There's still well over a half a season to go. But of course, there's this huge pack of teams, right? But when you look at the teams, none of them look like, you figure Edmonton, who's got a lot of problems, will figure something out. They have the same old Godzillas that they have. That usually kicks in for them at some point, so figure that they're in the mix. But that last wild card spot, you know, we're talking about Chicago and San Jose, and it's a mass of teams. So, from a locker room perspective, now, if you listening out there might say, forget about it, man, it's not going to happen. I understand that, and that's probably still way more likely than not. But what if you could get a run that Philip Forsberg traditionally goes on at some point? He goes on a binge and he starts scoring a bunch of goals. He hasn't had that yet. He hasn't had that quick power in his game that sets him apart. He hasn't had that magic touch. He's still got 20 points, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. 10, 10, 20. That's not embarrassing or anything like that. But we're talking about Philip Forsberg, who, when he is a difference maker, he can put the team on his back for a while. And the same is true of Roman Josi. Like last night, the last two games actually, Roman Josi has made uncharacteristic mistakes in the defensive zone. He's just getting beat one-on-one. It just doesn't
Nelson
happen.
Turned him inside out.
Yes, and made a great play
yesterday
to start. Yeah, and that was Roman Josi, I'm sure, went back to the bench going, what the heck? How did I let that happen? Same thing in the closing seconds of the first period in Carolina. Roman Josi got beat for a play that came up to the front, and the puck goes off of Steven Stamkos, but it was a dagger at the end of a period where the Predators were in survival mode. Like last night, they had to go in survival mode in the second period, and they lived to tell about it. Same thing happened in Florida, maybe even more extreme, and they survived. The first period in Carolina, they did not survive. They got buried.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's all these little details. So Roman Josi has not hit his stride yet. His underlying numbers are pretty steady, but you're not seeing, and they're also trying, I think, figure out who's the right guy to play with him. Because I think Nick Hague, he hasn't been back very long. They tried Willsby for a while. He was in and out. So the right partner for Josi is a good question in the coming weeks. But we haven't seen Roman Josi, who's a guy that can elevate everybody on the team. What if you got that from the Predators? What would you look like? I think you can come into the rink when you've won 5 out of 7 going, hey, what do you got here?
I certainly think Philip Forsberg is hampered, for lack of a better word, by the fact that he's not playing with O'Reilly. What I do think is interesting, Willie, to your point, is when Forsberg has played with other players over the past seven games, the lines have performed significantly better than the one that he has been on consistently over the past seven games with Halla and Marchessault. Whether he's playing with Halla and Wood or Svechkov and Wood, the underlying numbers of those lines are significantly better. Now, it's a smaller amount of time, so take that into account. But I am wondering if perhaps Matthew Wood playing with Philip Forsberg more consistently could be of help to Philip Forsberg.
I think they're looking at that, and it's a lot to ask of Wood, who's only 20, but he's got he's got a skill set. He's got a hockey IQ that I think could fit with Philip Forsberg. But there's the defensive side as well. There's the responsibilities away from the puck. It can work. And I think they're looking at, they're trying it. Like we said, they tried Svechkov would at Forsberg. Because Svechkov, he started playing very well. Of course, the game was really out of hand. So I don't know that you got the best from Carolina defensively at that point. They're just trying to ride out the game. They're way ahead. If you give up a goal, whatever. But they did generate quite a bit in that game. I'm curious what it looks like against St. Louis. Because as we were saying, you're not going to win the battle of territorial play most nights against the Avalanche. It's just not going to happen. They're the best. St. Louis is a team that is more of an even matchup, and those are the kind of games that you need to start winning 60% of from here on out, at least, when you're playing that pack of teams that are in the running for the wild card spot, and there's a bunch of them coming up. Two with St. Louis, as we mentioned. You're going out to just after the New Year, you're going to play, or between Christmas and just after New Year's, you've got Utah in there, you've got Edmonton, you've got Calgary. So there's a lot of important games coming up as Barry Trotz tries to say, hey, is this little 5-2 thing something that's going to keep going in this direction? Or, do I still have to sort of take this with a grain of salt of what they really are? We'll have to find out.
Let me ask you a question that you posed. I know you said in the coming weeks, but I'm going to put you on the spot right now, Willie Donick. Which partner for Roman Josi do you think will get the most out of Roman Josi? You mentioned Nick Hague. Adam Willsby has played a significant amount of time with Roman Josi. That's really been it. Willsby and Hague. He's played a little bit with Nick Blankenberg. He's played a little bit with Nick Perbix, but it's mostly been Hague and Willsby. So assuming those are your two options, which of those two partners do you think gets the best out of Josi?
I think, now this is a better question for Hal Gill, because he's the guy that watches this closely, understands a little bit more how a partnership works together on a blue line. My thought is, if they can handle, I think Willsby has the ceiling and could mix. I see those two, they can really be mobile, those two. I think they pose problems for a defense because both of them together are mobile, but they also, I think, are a little more susceptible to getting countered on the other side, right? Like we've seen that happen. So it's a little risk-reward. There's a little higher risk with Willsby and Josi, but maybe a higher reward is how I would answer it. And I think, to be fair, Nick Hague's got to get to another level. I think of Ryan McDonough, his first year with the Predators, just didn't look like the same guy. Like, wait, this is the guy that had all these great things happen? It took him a year, or at least most of a year, to really settle in and play well. Brady Shea last year. Now, he finally got a goal last night. Maybe that will get his confidence going. Brady Shea has a lot of responsibilities every night. I'm hoping Hague can improve as he gets comfortable, plays more. He missed a lot of time. I don't think you've seen the best of Nick Hague just yet.
I am intrigued by the upcoming matchups with the St. Louis Blues. The Predators have not seen the Blues so far this season. It's been a rough season for the Blues. A lot of the same problems that the Predators are having. What's your early read on the Blues as you prepare for this matchup?
The early read is, it looks like last year, the last time the Predators saw the Blues down the stretch, the Blues could do no wrong. They were the Predators from 2 years ago.
Yes.
They were the team that all of a sudden hit a groove and could not lose. Like, everything was going right. And I think there were two, maybe even three matchups late in the season where the Predators walked away from the rink going, we're just as good as them. We had better chances, but the Blues made the plays. They haven't had the mojo this year, the Blues, the same way. And they do have some guys that are banged up. Got a lot of the same guys.
Jordan Binnington is having a rough season. And we know this about Jordan Binnington. He can turn it on in
yes,
a snap.
Streaky.
But he has had a rough season for the Blues. And that's played a part in where they are in the standings. He's not the only one.
And as we talked about in the context with UC Saros, what is the defense look like in front of him. Last year, they had a really airtight defense where they would give you a lot of shots from the outside, but they were not going to let you in the middle. I haven't watched it, but the numbers would tell you it hasn't been as effective this year. So if you got the dream of climbing from the bottom and making this an interesting season and not just having a, well, it's time to sell, rebuild, which way is it going to go? You've still got time on both of these paths. These two games against St. Louis are really big.
And you can watch that game tomorrow on FanDuel Sports Network at 7 o'clock. Of course, you can also listen to it right here on 102.5 The Game with pregame starting at 6 o'clock. For Willie Donick, I'm Adam Vingan. Thank you for listening to Preds Insiders on 102.5 The Game.